Thanks, Ed. It's tradition that we open the floor for questions, and Anna said that she would welcome questions from the floor.
We make you volunteer. Everyone who's sitting on the back row is always a suspicious character, isn't it, Michael? Any kid who sits on the back row, you always ask them a question to see if they're awake.
You mentioned before the target audience in terms of years 5 and year 11 years of age. Would that be the only time that would engage those students, or would it be a series of engagements right up to the age of 17 or 18?
Yes, that the second strike. What I meant was that we forget. A lot of effort's put into the 18-year-olds. What we should be doing is know when children are making subject choices in secondary school. A lot of effort is wasted because they have to make their choices at 14, so in some systems, and they have to make it again at 16. And if they choose the wrong subjects because they don't like the teacher or they want to do what their best friend's doing, we've missed the opportunity. And that needs to be done as well as what we do for 18-year-olds and what we do to support people and lead them on through university and into tertiary postgraduate education. And what I meant was that in addition to all that, we should go down to the 5 to 11-year-olds and take the magic there and open doors. It's a bit, like Alice in Wonderland. You open the doors, you can't go with them, but you can give them the cake, the eat me, drink me, and you can help them go through those doors. Yes?
You get many opportunities in a normal educational situation, primary, secondary, where people from industry are invited to sort of share their dream, their vision and issues like that.
In some countries, they have a fantastic ambassadorial system where societies like aerospace engineering societies, like universities, like industrial companies, will register themselves as a contributor to the ambassadors system. And they will offer speakers, maybe once, it depends on the size of the company, but they'll offer speakers on certain subjects once or twice a year, and they'll support in kind by sending someone into schools. And that's something that you could offer yourself. And what I meant about being broad-ranging is to offer it not just to science classes. I think it's wonderful to be able to go and join if you're going to join a history class, for instance, when they're doing Roman technology and bridge building, or if you're going to do Leonardo da Vinci and look at his flying machines, it's fantastic to go into a history class and be an ambassador. So that's really very exciting, and it's something that could be adopted easily in other countries too.
I've heard that British Aerospace start their recruiting drive in primary school.
Mm-hmm, that's true. It's true because it ignites passion, and it is a very serious fact that we have children. I have children who I teach at age 10, and they tell me they're going to be a doctor, and when they leave, and I've taught them for 7 years, and they go to university to read medicine. It's a very, very strong if someone's decided what they want to be before they leave junior school, and it usually sticks all the way through. So it's an important age group to go and talk to.
Is a way of encouraging to students of all ages. It seems to me that encouragement you're talking about has a multiplicity of factors in it which are very expensive. Take this place, for instance, $6.5 million to encourage people into the space education. Would it not be cheaper and easier to spend money on stopping the discouragement factors which are in society these days, which actually turn the children off what they might have thought of doing in the first place? I mean, if you put out your factors of encouragement, you're still fighting the discouragement. You're making it very hard for yourself.
I'm not quite sure I follow you. I mean, there are different issues here, aren't there? I mean, we're talking on different levels, and there are different budget lines and different ways of doing things, and they are all equally important. The whole point about standing on the shoulders of giants is explaining that we're up against a much bigger problem, and you cannot turn those factors off. You cannot do that. You can't win against it, because when you were going to university and leaving school, we all belonged to an age where you read either straight arts or you read straight sciences. There wasn't very much in between. Nowadays, the choice is huge, and young people can have relatively easily, they can have a lifestyle. It is about lifestyle. I was listening to young people talking about what they wanted to do. They choose their universities on lifestyle. Then they look at the courses that are going to be there. They're not choosing to have a career in a certain way and then look at how a university can support that. They want lifestyle, they want fun, they want parties. And it's a totally different mindset from when we were at university and going there. So we have to separate that and put that on one side. The only way you can persuade them is to show them that what you've got is also as good as that. And places like this are bonuses. They're the cherries on the cake. We're talking about what we can do as individuals, what we can do ourselves. We can't change government policy, not overnight, but we can go in and, using passion, you can ignite souls, you can touch them, you can make them wow, you can make all the hair stand up on the back of the kid's neck. That is the first thing that's important. The other people have to catch them later, but what we're talking about today is what can we do that is practical, and we have to try that, because we can't change, we can't spend money turning off the other things, because it's a new age and a new society. It's a much bigger problem and a much wider problem, and it's not a simple issue. 20 years of helping kids fill in their university forms, and you say, why are you doing this course? And you have people who are very good at physics, and they want to do business studies, and you say, where did this come from? Oh yeah, but I don't really want to do that, because they're nerds who do that. And you can't persuade them to move, because they want the fast car and they want the penthouse apartment and they want the two holidays and they want to go skiing. And there's no way they're going to get that on a government income working in a research lab. And we can't change that, so we have to go for passion, get them through the soil. Sorry, Michael.
Can I just ask what the discouragements were that you were talking about? Because you mentioned, you know, we were up against all these discouragements, for example.
Well, one of the discouragements that I find, and this is within the Royal Aero Society in actual fact, is that the education that, for instance, that the magazines put out, seems to me that it's telling the students that they've got to, that it's the end job. They're going to be executives from day one. They're going to have the fast cars and whatever. There is no encouragement to start at the bottom and work your way up. That's one of the discouragements, is that if you can't get to the top the day you leave university, there's no point in doing it. But you've got to be prepared to learn and get that experience before you become that top dog. So the discouragement is that they are not being told that there is a lot of work to be done and not a reward for
Well, I think they actually know that very well. In fact, that is the problem. That is the very essence of what I was talking about, because they don't want to do that and they don't have to do that, because they can go into leisure studies and media studies and communication, and they can have that quite quickly. If you go to university, they know jolly well that if they read history or they read French or German or Russian or mathematics, they're going to have to put a lot of time in, a lot of time. And they don't want to do that. They know only too well that they have to start at the bottom when they go into industry and into engineering. But they can go to university and do business studies and economics, have a great social life, and they can move sideways relatively easily into a market which at the moment is still fluid. They have actually sort of, the wave hasn't capped itself, and at the moment they can still move sideways and they can have the lifestyle that they want, and they don't want to work. There's a new ethos. Kids don't go for gold anymore. They sit there, and I'm talking in general terms now, not in individual terms, because there are students, of course, who still do work very hard. But I have students who say to me, well, what do you mean I could work harder? I've already got a 5 or I've got a 6. And you say, yes, but you could get a 7. You could get a top grade. And they say, well, I don't need it. I only need so many points. And they are happy to have what they want to get into a place, because it's no longer important. It's a currency. It's a totally different ball game altogether from what it was like. Even in the 20 years I've been in the classroom, I have seen enormous changes.
just a question. You spoke mainly from the situation of the European Space Agency. Do you have any insight whether the same situation exists in NASA? Or is it different?
Well, NASA has exactly the same problems, and they, with the government, published a white paper in the White House. It's in the public domain. You can have a look at it. It's on the web. And they have addressed the same problem, and they can't get enough aerospace engineers. Europe, I think, and places like Australia are trying to do something about it. They're trying to look at their homegrown market and what can they do to encourage it and to fertilise it and enrich it. America's solution, which is actually in the government paper, is to just buy them from everybody else. You grow them and they will buy them, and you will be left with nobody, but they're quite happy to do that. So that's something else that you need to look at if we want to keep our own technological society, which we have to keep our homegrown scientists at home.
You picked up on the point a little bit earlier about the tensions being out of this, the graduates, the training teachers being out of school within 6 weeks and starting the course. I think that's probably a fairly unique feature, and I think it probably stands in good stead for teachers. Trainings just to really work out whether they really want to be there or really whether they don't. I wanted to compare it with, and I don't know broadly whether this is, happens a lot in engineering, but I can talk from in our own family where her passionate daughter was passionately environmental and civil engineering, and she's muddling away, highly academically through second year, but she will never be an engineer. We can see that already. Her part-time job is in retail, and she's already carving out her career to be a project manager to open new stores in retail. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a terrible tragedy, but where I see the problem is not essentially the course, because she had picked the course and went many miles from home to do the course. It was the fact that the course hasn't really engaged itself with the product at the end. You know, where all this engineering study will actually lead. So there's no engineering partnership. There's a few holiday jobs that you can apply through engineering or whatever. But when there's an economic component with students about, working for $5 an hour for the company, or whether they, the reasonable living in their part-time position becomes a bit of a quandary. And so I think it's a total tragedy in her case from someone who's very, very passionate, who I think should follow her dreams, but probably won't work as an environmental civil engineer, which I think she probably, would have been brilliant at. Mm. Not to say that she may not.
Well, that's one of the things I was trying to explain, that when I was talking about the teachers in the classroom, that was not a criticism against the teachers. The training systems are such that if you follow a teacher training education degree, it's not a pure degree in engineering or electronics or whatever, and then you do a master's and then you become a teacher. It is an education degree, and it's 4 years of 10 weeks of this, 10 weeks of that, 10 weeks of something else. And for some people, for some primary education, it works very well. But for children in the classroom, sometimes the only exposure they have for a career is via their teacher. And these are people who've never actually lived in the community or worked in the community. In Australia, you have, I believe, this wonderful opportunity of teachers having sabbaticals, and they can have some time off and they can go and do things. Most of the rest of the world doesn't have that opportunity. And so you have people who have been in the classroom all their life. They started school at age 5, and they had the summer holidays at 18, and then they were back in the classroom on the other side of the desk within 6 weeks. And then they carry on, and they finish it, they do their teacher training practice, but they don't have any contact with the outside world. And our job as teachers is to prepare people for the outside world, and that's why I think it's very important that societies like yours come together and you actually try and take the perfume bottle into the classroom in some way and actually take the top off it and say, wow, you know, and get people excited. And it's a very important contribution that you can make. That's exactly what you're saying, that they just don't have engagement. And universities, to some extent, also should try a little bit harder because they offer, they have to have the capital, they've got to have the per capita funding, so they want people to come. And so the university prospectus is all about how wonderful and green it is, and there's a lake, and here's the wonderful accommodation, and oh, here's the bar and the activities, and there's white water rafting, and there's this society and that society. But there's not about anything about lifestyle afterwards and about the jobs, and look, you can do all of these wonderful things, and, but you've got to come to us. And so career advice for 18-year-olds and 17-year-olds needs to go really way back to 14-year-olds or 13-year-olds because they change their first layer of subjects when they're 14. And I think it's so important that universities and societies actually start to go down and take that perfume in and engage them so they know what the stepping stones are as to why they're doing this.
My point was that the university can, you know, continue the passion. Unfortunately, the part-time job did, and the part-time job's taken over the passion.
Yes.
Whether that's good or bad, I don't know. But, you know.
Yes, it is a deficiency.
Maybe one more question. Really?
I'll ask Peter. Who told you that governments don't have any money?
Governments don't have any money for something that doesn't make them look good, feel good in the public eye. They have plenty of money when there's an election coming up and they need to look pretty good, pretty fast.
Okay, thanks, Anne. Thank you very much.